Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Ancient expedition.
I think we're looking again at a lost technology. And it was this ancient apocalypse 12,800 years ago that wiped that from the human memory banks.
Why were these ancient elongated skulled peoples or humanoids of Malta living underground?
Now I believe we're talking prior to 9700 BC for the original construction of the Sphinx.
And they were what some people have called giants, probably no more than 7 to 8 feet tall. And those giants have been pulled out of American mounds.
Whether it's the colossal statue heads that have been unearthed, to all the strange artifacts you've been showing in the museums, to some of the strange features they seem to possess, the more I learn about the Olmec culture, really the more fascinated I become. Derek Olson here to journey deep into history's mysteries with you. And I'm really excited to be joined by a very special guest with me today. My guest is Natalia Campana. She's an explorer. She's a researcher, a teacher, I just learned. But she was one of our Peruvian tour guides on our last Egypt tour. And Natalia, I just want to thank you so much for joining me today.
Gracias, Derek. It's a pleasure to be with you and to have this invitation on to be here.
I'm really looking forward to some of these discussions we're going to get into regarding the many mysteries and legends and oral traditions regarding the mighty Inca Empire and pre-Inca civilizations. But first, I just want to tell everybody, so on our Peru tour here last month, Natalia was one of our tour guides, and she was our tour guide on kind of the first leg of the expedition when we were in Lima. And then when we were in the North Coast, and I was just really impressed, Natalia, with your charisma. I was really impressed with your depth of insight and knowledge regarding just all the ancient Andean legends and cultures of Peru. So that was a great trip, wasn't it?
It was great. I got this invitation to be part of the group, not to be tour guiding. And what really fascinated it was the meeting telling that, okay, we come here with an open mind and we come here to learn all the non-traditional history that we are kind of got used to and to hear. But I always say to people, be open to everything because everything is possible. And from that, no, we can really help each other to understanding more and to go deeper. So, and I love the vibe of the group, no, and all of you that are very into questions and looking for and examining it. That really makes me really, really happy. I'm very open and to continue learning too.
Yeah, I like how you referenced that first initial meeting we had with the entire group, where I kind of set the foundation with telling everybody, let go of your preconceived thoughts and be open to all theories, all evidence. And I really liked that you were open to that as well. That was really cool. So I wanted to ask you first, you know, I learned on this trip again in Peru that becoming a licensed tour guide in Peru is a very rigorous, strict thing, and it requires a lot of education. So tell us a little bit about, real quick, what led you to want to become a licensed tour guide in Peru?
Well, for me, I've always been fascinated since I was a little girl about traveling, about ancient history. I was at my 8 years old going into big libraries in the times before internet, no? And so I have this that spirit of really looking for more but I didn't know that tour guiding was the way. So it was just a matter of circumstances, no, that I ended up in the tour guiding school. And yes, study for 4 years. And then we specialize in a particular topic, no? In my case, after the years of study, I specialized in nature and also archaeology. So, but it is very strict. Peru government, they really take care a lot of the tourist industry, no, and make sure that these national patrimonies are protected, no.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they've really got, the government really has the tourism locked down in a sense to where you were saying you have to only be a tour guide in one region. You can't just be a tour guide in the whole country. It's either Cusco or it's Lima or it's in the south, right? So you're right now you've been a tour guide, I think, in all parts, but right now you're focused on Lima, correct?
It is correct. Well, always been an explorer, so in one time I was tour guiding in the Amazon, no, and then I switched to Lima and then Cusco, and then I'm back to Lima. So which was great because it really gave you a very open-ended, no, window, let's say, no, of the different regions, and then at the end you're connected all of them, no. And this is what Peru is. It's a combination of different traditions and history and living history, especially, you know, with all the communities and tell us amazing stories. You know?
Natalia, where would you like to start out with this? I'll just kind of let you start with where you're going to take us on this because you know so much about these ancient Andean civilizations. Where do you want to start?
I got this feeling that when people visit us here, I know that we go very, very deep into the Inca history. And the Incas were completely amazing, as you saw, and all these constructions and ancient technology, you know. But something that I want to share is that Peru is the result of more than 5,000, 10,000, and even we can go way beyond that, of years of development. So that's why going into the Incas and then the people before Incas, it can give us a better view of all this richness of Peru, no? That's why when we were here in Lima, no, we went to visit one of the oldest places in the world, no? And it was the oldest civilization in America called Caral, no? Which is three and a half hours from Lima, no? And so we could understand the long history of Peru and maybe going deeper into very old civilizations, no? Way before times, no?
Yeah, I was so glad we went to Caral. Mm-hmm. Which you and some of the other guides were teaching us. This is a spot that you drive a couple hours north of Lima, and I mean it's quite a drive, and it's in the middle of nowhere, and it's such a unique location. And if you're watching on YouTube right now or Spotify, you're going to see some photo and video footage of Caral, so you know exactly what we're talking about. But this is kind of a site that's barely untouched. A lot of people still don't know about it, but there's these massive pyramids that are as old as some of the dynastic Egyptian pyramids in Egypt, right? So tell us a little bit about Caral and the mysteries surrounding it, because it's in such a weird, desolate spot in a way that's deserty, but it's surrounded by mountains. It's literally like mountains on every side.
Well, definitely there must have been a reason why the ancient Peruvians, they chose that specific area. Because if you notice, we need to be completely off-road. So crossing a river, enter to a valley, and then arriving to this desertic area. And then this place is between the desert and already bordering the beginning of the Andes. So you are in this transition at altitude or geography now. And once you arrive to Caral, no, you see all of these hills, desert hills, and then we got the pyramid and the heart of the city, no, just in the center of these desert mountains, no. And so far, Caral is very new, very new. It was discovered scientifically in 1994. No, by a Peruvian archaeologist, Ruth Shadi. So they've been working in Caral, no, in all this time, but it still be very little that we know. See, the archaeologists are finding all these pyramids that are completely connected with the solstice, with the equinoxes as well, no? And it seems like each one of them, they're practicing different rituals.
It's presumed to be about 5,000 years old, right? And mm-hmm. I think you said there was about at least 6 pyramids there, and the largest one is over 100 feet tall. So these are pretty big. I read somewhere that like in the early 1900s, some of the original archaeologists that were there doing excavations of some pottery and stuff, they didn't even realize that the giant hills in front of them were buried pyramids, correct?
It is correct. And it might sound crazy, knowing that we are talking about this massive pyramid and nobody knew about it, no? But we need to also understand the reality of Peru. See, in the last 100, 150 years, we didn't know much about the pre-Inca history. See, and for many of us, many of the locals, like the local people that we met there, they were only ruins, or they were only covered hills, no? So there was not much knowledge, no? And that's why for us, I got this big feeling that while we are opening more knowledge, that it will help us, especially to us, to appreciate it more and to study more, because at the end, it's the local people who are the guards, no? The ones who will preserve those places.
Yeah, and it's fascinating to consider that if this is 5,000 years old, I mean, this culture was thriving thousands of years before the Inca, right? Oof, so yes. To your point, you know, when you get to Peru, everyone's talking about the Inca and they were fascinating, but there's so much history before the Inca, like at Caral. Another place mm-hmm. I wanted to ask you about mm-hmm. is you took us to the Larco Museum there in mm-hmm. Lima, which was just an incredibly beautiful museum. But what fascinated me the most mm-hmm. were the sculptured ceramic bottle heads of the, was it the Mochica or the Moche people?
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. Mm-hmm.
And if you're watching again on Spotify or YouTube, you'll see these incredible detailed faces. But tell us a little bit about this mm-hmm. culture and why were they making these heads mm-hmm. like this? I mean, the features were so, they were like the features were from people from all over the world in Peru.
It is, and this is one of my favorite rooms as well, no? Because in this room, which is only, they call it the deposit, see? So they have more than 25,000 ceramics there. And the majority of them, or most of them, are those portrait ceramics, no? That is really going into a big gallery of the history of humankind. See, because we really see all these characteristics, no? And also, it's very, very interesting to see the people before the big mixture that we have in South America. And they really can connect in us with other civilizations around the world. A lot of the ancient, no, Peruvians, they were very looking very similar to the Mongolian people, see? and you really see them in their characteristics, no? And so, yes, I like to call it the first selfies because it seems like it. And they were very, very detailed by even if someone have a scarf or one eye bigger than the other one, they want to make sure that they will represent in that in the ceramic. You know?
In this Moche culture, didn't you say they arranged from like 100 to 800 AD? Is that kind of the time frame?
It is correct. Yes, from 100 to 200 years after Christ. No, so we're talking about a pretty much the same time of Nazca society, which is another big one here in Peru. So it seems like by that time was called like the golden age of Peru, because we got these very high developed civilizations like the Moche in the north, the Lima people, which is the one of their main center was Pugiana, another place that we visited in Lima, Huaca Pugiana. And then in the south, we got the Nazca people with the Nazca lines, those big graphics in the desert, no? So they are all contemporaneous at the same time.
Tell us a little bit about Inca origins or even the pre-Inca origins and how it relates to what you know of Viracocha. It seems like everything points to Viracocha coming from maybe the Lake Titicaca area. So tell us about what your vast experience, everything you've read and studied on the origins of the peoples who inhabited this amazing land.
Yes, and I really invite a lot of older people to really see that part of the history of the Incas, all the Viracocha legends, they're all connected. Viracocha for us is the God creator, and a lot of the legends about the beginnings of the Incas, they're all pointing out to Viracocha. So Viracocha is not only from the Incas time, see? Viracocha, when you see the art in the pre-Inca civilizations, you see Viracocha in most of their art. See, it's just changing a little bit some characteristics, but at the end, it's the same concept. And it seems like the evolution of these Viracocha gods through more than 5,000 years of history. See? And then during the Incas times, that we are talking about the earliest 1400s, they've been saying that Viracocha was this very important god, the one that creates the universe, the moon, all the stars, and everything that we know. And then with all this creation, no, he used to blow to the stones and creating things, no? And then he talks a lot about Viracocha creating giants, see? A giant, but it seems like it didn't work as it was planned, no? And then after that, he destroyed the giants with a big diluvio, you know, water going, and then a big flood, no? And then after that, no, he start all over again, but already with humans, see? So he start to teach people about engineering, about technology, about organization. So he was with the people for a time, and according to the legend, he moved to the Pacifico, see? And then after that, we don't know what happened, but it seems like he went to the sky, see? And it's very interesting because when you see, like, for example, in the Larco Museum, we really see the same legend, but with another name. We got Nailam, is another god in one of the pre-Inca cultures, and he got the same story, being someone on Earth and then disappearing in the Pacifico. See? So for me, I study all these civilizations, definitely there is something that is clicking and it says, this is not a coincidence. No, there are some connections over there. And so that's one of the legends of the creation of the Incas. No, so when he destroyed the giants and they start the first couple of the Incas, the royal couple called Manco Capac and Mama Ocllo, they emerge. They start from Lake Titicaca, from the deepest waters of Lake Titicaca, and then they went to looking for lower lands in a fertile valley. That's how they arrived to the Valley of Cusco. Mm-hmm. And this is where this all starts.
Okay. It's interesting how so much of those Andean legends are similar to kind of what the Bible describes too.
Yes.
With, you know,
I agree.
The Creator God, a flood, giants, giants get wiped out, restart with humans, and yeah, it's so interesting because. Don't a lot of the Quechuan legends speak of even giants possibly building some of these walls?
They are in some, but they are not so popular on this on the tales, no, of the local people. They are more related to Viracocha and the sun, the moon, no, but. But you really can tell that there might be some relationship with that too. We are not South American cultures. We are not the only ones. Also, you find this very similar story in Mesoamerica, like Mayas, Aztecs, no? They got some stories like that too.
When I went to Peru this last time, I came away with a new sense of just how these ancients were so holistic. They knew all about the earth. I mean, they knew more about the created earth than I think we do today. They knew all about the ingredients and even in these megalithic walls are hidden these anthropomorphic, zoomorphic figures of pumas and serpents. And, the ancients really held the mountains to be sacred, correct? And it seems like the Machu Picchu mountain is the most sacred. Is that accurate?
Yes. Well, Machu Picchu, it was one of the most important for sure. But I'm sure that a lot of them, they were all very well connected, no? And it's true. This is something that for thousands of years, people have been observing nature. And by observing nature, we're considering nature not like a resource. We consider it like a living being. See? So that going into that concept, no, we created a very beautiful way of preserving, talking to the mountains, no, talking to Pachamama, Mother Nature. And going into that concept to all the temples, no, as you saw, they have this harmony, no, with nature. And it seems like a lot of the temples, yes, they were for praying, no, and connecting, but also I believe they got some very healing centers, say, and because you really see it once you are in there, all if they're all connected and aligned with the sun, with the moon, the air. So very, very well done. Not only the constructions, especially the locations.
One thing I really was learning about on this trip was the legend of Hanan Pacha or the three worlds. Do you know anything about that? And so let me set this up and then you can kind of tell me if I'm wrong or you can add to it.
Yeah.
But the legend of the Hanan Pacha basically means there's three worlds, and the Hanan Pacha is the It's like 3D. They're the first culture who many believed shaped the bedrock and engineered the biggest cyclopean walls. And then you've got the Urnpacha, who came along later. And they're also called, I think, the Sapa Rumi, who, and they were like the second culture who might have engineered smaller sized megaliths like at Machu Picchu or the foundations. And then you've got the Ucanpacha, who might have been like the Wari and the Inca, who would have come along much later and built on top of the previous two older cultures.
Well, yes, I heard about that, that legend also, no? And the three words are very present in our culture. And the way how they interacted and they help us for the construction of a lot of places, no? And as you well describe it, no? You got the word of the upper word, as we call it, no? The Hanapacha. Then this one, the present, no? Word, the Kaipacha. And the Ukupacha, the word of the dead, no? And they're all connected to one another, no? And yeah. They seems like during the different ceremonies, they could connect it with those three words, no? And help them for giving the answers for construction or also astronomical studies, no? And I want to add something to that. We representing animals in the three words. See?
Right.
Like the word of the gods is represented by the condor, then the word of humans by cats like the jaguar or puma, and then the word of the dead by the serpent. And one of my points is you got the birds, you got the felines, and then you got the serpents. They're all connected in this big circle that it makes the three words. So when we go into study all other civilizations, we are not that far from that too, right? So we got Egyptians, no? They were big observers and lovers of felines, no? We got to the Mayas with the eagles, the serpents. Then I can name so many of them. Asian Greeks, Romans, India, even the Chinese dragon. So many people believe that the dragon only belongs to China. That's not true. You see dragons in Mesoamerica. You see dragons in Peru. And the dragon is a mix of the three animals. So you got this, you know, this face of a cat, body of a snake, which flies. So, and somehow they're all represented over there. So, I don't know, I just live in there like this. I plant in the seed to see where that can take us.
No, that's great. It's fascinating how, like they say, these are like living stones. It's not just a big giant wall. It's a big giant wall that is been incredibly engineered, but then inside these walls are hidden these pictograms, like at the Inca Roca wall is the I think there's a puma in that wall, and then at Sacsayhuaman there's the massive puma paw, and then at Sacsayhuaman there's the serpent. And so literally the three worlds, it's that just to me is so mind-blowing. It's not just three different civilizations possibly, but it's three levels of consciousness all represented by these three animals that are embedded everywhere. And even like at the Gate of the Sun at Ollantaytambo.
Yeah.
I mean, there's what looks like massive puma faces that used to be on that.
Wow.
That were, you know, since chiseled off. So much we could talk about. Is there a favorite? Is there any other favorite legends you have of the pre-Incas or the Incas that you want to share?
Well, the one that I was describing to you about Viracocha, it really fascinates me. And you know, legends always come from a fact. I always say that. So it's just that with the pass of the centuries, we added more the mythological and the magical aspects. But definitely it comes from a true story. And that's why whenever I go deeper into the Viracocha legend, and that they said all the beginnings and the late Titicaca. So you hit that, late Titicaca. So, okay, where it take us? When you visit that part, which is bordered with Bolivia, which is Bolivia is also fantastic, no? You got the Tiahuanaco civilization there, no? So all that part is one of the oldest parts of South America, see, in terms of ancestral history. So Viracocha talks a lot about the late Titicaca. So, and then not so far away or not so long ago, they did some studies. I think it was the Pennsylvania University and one other in Brussels. They did some studies. They went deep in some part of the late Titicaca, and they've been finding basals, they've been finding, they found remains of an ancient civilization in the deepest water of the Lake Titicaca. So, and then you go a little bit in the surroundings of the Lake Titicaca, and there was a place where there are, seems like some portals, we call it sacred portales, no? Where people used to be connected. And then you connected with Viracocha, and it seems to me that there is something over there to really continue looking for it. See? That Lake Titicaca water, it's amazing.
Yeah, there is so much regarding legends of portals around that area. What can you tell us about Amaru Muru and the legends of the portal there? Isn't there a legend where a guy actually went through it with a sun disk?
Yes. Well, I heard about that. I haven't been there yet. I'm going very soon. For some reason, we are talking about this because it's really awakening me, the desire to go there very soon. I can hear a lot of stories, but I need to feel it. I need to open in my mind and see what is happening there. But it definitely is connected to the remains in the bottom of the Lake Titicaca. I'm very sure about that.
So when the Inca arrived, they worshipped many gods, but like you said, mm-hmm. Viracocha was their primary creator deity, correct?
Yes, see.
And the Inca, the crazy thing is they only lasted, what was it, about 100 years?
Yeah, 130 or 140 years so far, as far as we know.
Yeah, and there was only about 6 total Inca emperors that I think I remember. Each emperor was known as the Sapa Inca or the only emperor. Yeah. And so tell us what you know about the Inca Empire and what amazes you most about them.
Yes, something that is really fascinated about the Incas is that they took the best of all the people before them. And so they were very big collector of knowledge. And that's why, for me, is one of the explanations why in such a short time, they did all the amazing things that we see now, see? And while compared to other pre-Inca societies, it took for them 300, 400, 700 years, no? They had a very long process. But the Incas, in a very short period of time, they were building places like Machu Picchu. No? They were building places like Sacsayhuaman, no? Completing also of what people did before. So they completed, no? And they were all in the process of construction and very high technology.
When we say the word Inca, that doesn't just refer to the general population, right? Doesn't it? It really refers to the ruling class.
See, and this is something that later on during the colonial time, the real name of the civilization was lost. Jose, because as you said, Derek, Inca was only the king, no? Let's put it, or the Sapa Inca, no? If we compare it to Europe, will be a king, no? The main royalty. But the real name, I'm going to say it in Quechua, see, which is the native language in Peru. The real name was called Tahuantinsuyo. Tahuantinsuyo. It's a long name, but the meaning of that name is Tawa means four, no? Tin is abbreviation of sun, and Suyo means regions. So if we put together the four regions of the sun, no? And so they were called like this, no? And later on during the Spanish times, they named it Inca to everyone, no? So, and yes, they were really amazing, no? By collecting all the knowledge of the people before them. And something that is very beautiful once you visit the Inca sites, it's the amazing energy that those sites have. And there is some beautiful, it's very peaceful. They are healing centers. They are healing centers for sure. So it must be something with the vibration. You know, everything is moving by sounds, no? The resonance of everything. So I believe that many of those places were, by vibration, they were healing people. And you really feel it. We can't see it. Energy is something that we cannot see, but we can feel. So you feel it there.
Mm-hmm. Same thing in Egypt, you know, all of these ancient Egyptian temples were basically healing or fertility centers. And at some points you can definitely feel energy. We had a couple of people on our last Egypt tour that felt energy so strong. There was a doctor on our tour and she's into holistic medicine. She felt energy so strong at Isis temple. She had to literally leave because it was so powerful. Her body couldn't handle it. So I was like, wow. And then I might've shared on a previous episode. Mm. I'm not a guy that feels a whole lot, but when I was in the so-called King's Chamber of the Great Pyramid this last time, our guide was resonating the chamber and it was getting louder and louder. And I felt like, it was, I don't know if you've ever had that laughing gas at the dentist, the gas that makes you kind of just real peaceful.
Ah, okay. Yeah.
That's what it felt like.
That.
It was just like, whoa.
And it's really interesting what you're saying, because there must be a reason now why all of these are connected. And there must be a reason why, no matter where we were at that time, South America, Egypt, Mesoamerica, no, we ended up doing the same thing. Who knows that maybe we were connected by this magnetic resonance, and we were healing centers all around the world, no, and the ancients. Civilizations, they're figuring out some of this technology that modern medicine are trying to figure it out right now, no? Because definitely you feel it. And so I'm trying to think, how can we decodify that to know?
Speaking of energy, one thing that really hit home on this last Peru trip was that at most of these sites, at the oldest parts of the sites that might be pre-Inca, are these, what are they called? These Intihuantanas. Mm-hmm. The kind of in the shape of the Andean cross, the Intihuantanas, like at Machu Picchu's got the most famous one. Mm-hmm. But then I think we saw one at Pisac and several other sites, and it's almost like, Rumi, our other guide, was theorizing these Intihuatanas might have acted kind of like an obelisk in Egypt. Mm-hmm. That is like an antenna pulling down the energy to this site. What are your thoughts on that?
I want to show you something. Can you see?
Yeah.
I think we are talking about the same, right?
Yep.
This is a sacred symbol for us. But you can also see some similarities in other civilizations, but it's very present here in Peru, which is the Chacana, no? Chacana, it means portal, say, or a stair to the most elevate, if we want another interpretation. And we already know that when we are into those temples, no, in any sacred place, and if we see a Chacana, that place, something happening there, see? And perhaps was a place of special rituals, a portal or a way of connecting for elevating consciousness, no? And yes, so this symbol is very powerful. And even in Machu Picchu, if there is one area that only you see half of this, no, on the ground. But then you have three windows, no? And then during the winter solstice, the sunlight entering, and then it completes the other half with a shadow. See? So I always say to people, where do you think is the other side? Underground? I say, Wait until the winter solstice to see them complete. No, so you really see this connection between Earth and the cosmos, and how the Chacana was the bridge for connecting both. So that's why it is fascinating.
But isn't the other name for that the Andean cross too?
Well, we call it the Cruz Andina, no, the Andean cross, no, and then the word that we know the most is Chacana, no,
which was probably the Inca word.
See, it is an Inca word. So some people, there's so many interpretations of the Chacana. You can see them maybe connected to the Southern Cross constellation. Also, if you see, it has like three. One, two, three, one, two, three, one, two, three, and then you got a center. So we are talking about the three words previously, right?
Right.
So one,
wow.
Two, three, one, two, three, one, two, three. And then you got something that connects everything, which is the one in the middle. So could be many, many interpretations there. Also connected with the solar calendar, the equinoxes, and oof. And that's why it's very powerful symbol for us.
Yeah, and that symbol is one of the most ancient symbols of the region. It way predates the Inca, correct?
It is correct.
Yeah.
And we are more familiar with the Incas, with the Chacana, because this is where you see them in the Inca sites. But once we go into this not so popular, or maybe we are still working, not excavating on the other sides, we can see that this symbol existed even in times before Christ, by the time of perhaps Paral, no? Not so long ago, like 4 months ago, archaeologists in Peruvian University, they found the biggest Chacana so far known in just 4 hours from Lima, on the way to Caral, no, in some parts over there. So 4 months ago, that's nothing, no? So.
Yeah, and we were actually supposed to go see that, but we ran out of time. I was so bummed on our tour.
It's still be a difficult place to get there. When people ask me, Natalia, how is Peru? It's like, okay, ready for the adventure, eh? Because as you saw, we went into some farms, we went to some cornfields and communities, and the and the cars are like boom, 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 no? And because, well, still be one of the few places around the world that you got the luxury to experience something like this, to really feel that adventure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love what you just shared about the Chincana, because really, it's such a fascinating place. The history is so deep in Peru and Cusco, with the Inca and the pre-Inca, because that symbol, that Chincana, it's literally embedded everywhere. You see it at every temple. I love that you reminded me, it basically symbolizes a portal. Mm-hmm. But like you said, it also, it's symbolic of that Hanan Pacha, the three worlds, the three levels of consciousness. It's all symbolic. Mm-hmm. And like what you said, when the solstice hits, what is it, June 13th?
June 21st.
Mm-hmm. June 21st. When that solstice hits, you can literally see the shadows beaming off these ancient megalithic symbols. Like she said, you'll see a part of it above ground, but then the shadow makes the other part revealed, and you realize, okay, wow, these people had an amazing astronomical knowledge, right?
Yeah. Can you imagine being, and because this is Machu Picchu, no? This place that I'm describing, no, with the Chincana, and imagine being in Machu Picchu, and at that time, and they are waiting for the exactly hour where the sun hits and complete the sacred symbol, no? So definitely that was a big feeling, and that's how they were all connected with the three worlds, no? And doing the ceremonies for healing or connecting, talking, understanding the cosmos and the universe, no? It's this deep knowledge of that, no? Nature and universe, no?
Yeah, Atahualpa, I think he ruled about 1532, and he was kind of like the last official Inca emperor. And like you said, that's when the Spanish came to the Cusco area to take over. Mm-hmm. And Atahualpa had heard all the legends of Viracocha returning one day from the sea. And didn't some of the legends, though, state that like Viracocha had kind of like white skin? So when the Spanish arrived with white skin, they thought these are the gods.
Yeah, that's true. And that was back in the 17th century. No, this is where all the Spanish chronics, no, they wrote, no, all these stories, and they described by collecting this legend from the communities at that time, and they described Viracocha with those characteristics, no? And they were not very much like the way how we look, no? That's why Atahualpa, knowing that there were some foreigners or some strange people, let's say, looking very different to us, no? Because if you see paintings of the Spaniards of those times, of course, no? They are completely different to us. Even they have this big mustache, right? Mm-hmm. And big beards. That if you see native people, we are hairless. See? We don't have that genetic characteristic, no? This is a characteristic of many of us. You see the men in the communities, they don't have mustache or beards. It's crazy. It's genetica. Genetica.
So that's...
And Europeans, they did and they do, no? So that's why Atahualpa was, I believe, very into knowing these people. That's why the meeting was set, no?
And that's why the Spanish were able to, like you said, conquer the Incas so easily, was because the Spanish just had a couple hundred soldiers, if my memory serves me right. The Inca had thousands upon thousands, yet the Spanish just walked right in because they were welcomed, right?
And, yes. It's pretty much it was pretty much like that, no? When the news of the new world hits Europe, there were thousands of people adventuring to do this expedition, but not many of them made it. Like hundreds of them, they died on the way. Some of them, they just went back to Europe, no? And there were just a small group arriving, no? And that's why, because of the circumstances were like this, no? Atahualpa set a meeting. Then by surprise, the Spaniards attacked and took him as a prisoner. Mm-hmm. And that's how the Incas or the civilization or the people, they want to save their ruler. So they opened the doors to the Spaniards, no? And so it was all the strategy, I believe. And but also the legends, I think they did a big part of this other chapter of Peru, no?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Natalia, this has been an amazing interview with you. So great to see you again.
Oh, and gracias, Derek.
Thanks for making the time. How can viewers and listeners follow you if they want to keep up to date with what you're doing? Are you on social media?
Yes, I am in social media and not on road. I will leave you now so they can check on the on my page.
Instagram. No?
In my Instagram, yes, it's correct. And so I'm sharing my travelings there, also my reflections, and you know, I'm also want to know more. So I think it's something that connecting with you and with all of you, no?
Yeah.
Because we have that feeling that something is coming up. So
yeah.
So, and we want to be part of it too.
If you're on Instagram, look for Natalia. Her handle is nat_onroad. So nat_ mm-hmm. onroad. Follow her she's got a lot of great photos, videos, and more information to learn about the amazing Inca Empire and the pre-Inca cultures of Peru. So Natalia, thanks again so much. And I got to tell everybody to join us next year for our Peru and Bolivia tour. It's going to be August 1st through the 12th. And you might get to meet Natalia. We'll find out. At this point, I don't know who all our guides will be, but it would be so awesome to have you back. Mm-hmm. And so you can go to ancientexpedition.org/tours to get all the information on that tour. We're going to go to Bolivia. We're going to go to Tiwanaku, Pumapunku. And then we're going to go up to Peru and hit Machu Picchu and all the amazing sights there. So hope you can join us. And Natalia, thanks again so much and have a great day.
Muchas gracias, Derek. And well, thank you for the invitation. It's a pleasure.